So Trevor Trowbridge, you've got some big shoes to fill today, my friend, because you are filling in for my guy, Bill Bender, who could not be with us today because he's got some staff meetings he's got to work through today. So you and I are going to talk a little college football. And it is a very, it's funny. I've had multiple people say this week to me, and I've said multiple times this week, like, there's just not a lot of sexy games in the schedule. And every time that's said to me, I remember back to the last time that we were in the situation and there was not a sexy schedule. And we didn't look at, you know, they're going into this week. What was it? Week six. And I was there. Okay. One, two games between ranked teams, right? It was one. It was Missouri and A&M. That was a blowout. It wasn't a very good game. Like, yeah, there's not going to be a lot of good games on this weekend. It's going to be kind of a boring weekend of football. And then what happens that weekend? Here's what happens that weekend. Friday night, Syracuse goes on the road and upsets number 25 UNLV. Vanderbilt controls the game against Alabama and pulls off the biggest upset in school history. Number one goes down. Arkansas has a huge home win over number four Tennessee, so number four goes down. Number eight Miami needs a last-second heroics from Cam Ward and help from the officiating crew and the replay crew of the ACC to avoid getting upset by Cal 39-38. Washington upsets number 10 Michigan on the road. Minnesota upsets number 11 USC. And it turns out SMU goes on the road and beats number 22 Louisville. So it turned out to be a pretty wild weekend of football, and it wasn't supposed to be a great weekend of football. Is this bye week going to be similar? We're going to find out, because on paper, there's not a ton of like, oh, wow, that's a really sexy game. A lot of important games, but not like the last couple weeks where there's like number one versus number five and all these, you know, there's five matchups last week between ranked opponents, including Notre Dame and Navy. This week, there's only two. And so we're going to preview the four biggest games of the weekend, Trev, and then kind of just talk about what we think about those games, make our predictions for those games. And then also we're going to add a little bit of flavor since it's two Notre Dame guys breaking the show down. We're going to talk about what those games could potentially mean for Notre Dame. And then after that, we're going to quickly work through a few games that we view as potential upset alert games. Won't break them down. We won't make predictions for them, but just keep an eye on this game. And here's why we think this team might be on upset alert. So, Trevor, we're going to go in order of time of kickoffs. We're going to do it that way, which means we're going to start off with the biggest game of the weekend. And that is at noon on Saturday on Fox. It's number four Ohio State, 6-1 Ohio State, at number three Penn State, 7-0 Penn State. The Buckeyes are a 3.5-point favorite on the road. The over-under is surprisingly at 45.5. I thought it'd still be a little bit higher than that, especially when you look at what Penn State did the last time they played a decent team. It was a 33-30 overtime game. Neither team is playing lights-out football right now. I am looking right now to find out about the status of Drew Aller. I have not noticed if he is going to play or not, but I would imagine that they're not going to announce anything one way or the other until game day. That's how teams usually play these type of games. If he does play, he's not going to be 100% healthy. If he doesn't play, that changes things a lot. What we're going to do for the purposes of this breakdown, Trevor, is we will assume, like we did for Georgia Tech with Haynes King, we're going to assume that Drew Aller plays in this game. And then we'll briefly talk about what happens if he doesn't. But this is obviously a huge game, Trevor, for a lot of reasons. Number one, if Ohio State loses, the heat starts kind of going up a little bit on your boy Ryan Day, right? And you're talking about a two-loss team now. And Ohio State's going to be fighting for their playoff lives at that point in time, Trevor, because the Buckeyes don't have a lot of wins to hang their hat on right now when you look at their resume. Neither does Penn State, but they got a chance to change that this weekend. Obviously, a big win over Ohio State completely puts them in a great position to be in the Big Ten title game. They would have Washington at home, at Purdue, at Minnesota, and home against Maryland in their final four games. Very clear path to a 12-0 season. For Ohio State, you'd get your second conference loss of the season, and you're out. I mean, they're not technically out. They're not eliminated, but the odds of Indiana, Penn State and Oregon all losing multiple games is slim. Because here's the thing, you'd need at that point in time Penn State and Oregon to both lose three games. Because if they both lose two, they would both have the head-to-head over Ohio State. So they're not technically eliminated from the Big Ten title game, but they're eliminated from the Big Ten title game. So it's a big game for both teams, Trevor. Huge game for both teams. Let's talk about it. Let's begin with you. What are your overall thoughts on this matchup? And what are you kind of just thoughts on these two teams as we go into this big game? Huge, which is, again, huge game.
Yeah, I think this matchup became significantly more interesting after what Ohio State's done the last couple of weeks. I'm trying, when you look at this matchup, you try not to let history kind of creep in, because for the sake of the argument, Penn State over the last, I mean, what, 5 to 8 years is like the same, right? They start the season undefeated. They creep their way up into the rankings.
Play
nobody, and then they play either one of Michigan or Ohio State and then lose. And then
oftentimes to both of them.
Yep. And then 2 weeks later, they play one of Michigan or Ohio State and then they lose. And then Penn State is 10-2. They're not playing in the Big Ten championship game. They're like ninth, you know,
right,
because they
all are inflated in the rankings because they're Penn State, right?
And that's typically what it is this year. In most years. This year, I think it's a little bit more interesting because Ohio State has done some very flashy things on the field. They have Jeremiah Smith and they have Igbuka, and Travion Henderson has ripped off some big runs, and Judkins has ripped off some big runs, and they have some big names on defense. And I think they have more holes than what people believe that they do. And I'm not going to say, well, they got exposed by Oregon. It's like, well, Oregon is the number one team in the country. Ohio State lost by one, and you know,
right.
Although
I would argue that if Oregon doesn't miss a field goal and have some other mistakes, that game could have. It reminded me a lot of the A&M Notre Dame game. Oregon missed some chances to make that a more convincing win, in my opinion.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, absolutely. And you also have to thank Ohio State's first scoring drive. There should have been an interception called because there was a clear recovery by the Oregon defender, and it wasn't. So
at the very least, it should have been an incomplete pass. The kid never caught the ball, and they ruled it a catch.
Totally.
This was terrible.
It was rough. But still, for the sake of the argument, I'm not going to say Ohio State has holes because they lost by 1 point on the road to the number one team in the country. Where I think they have more holes in what they do is after their performance at home against Nebraska. Now,
they also looked pretty mediocre in the first half against Iowa as well.
Agreed.
They turned it on in the second half, but it was 7-0 at halftime, and they were not playing good football.
Yeah, 100%. Ohio State is just not as like the dominant team that a lot of people thought that they were going to be this season when they play an opponent remotely resembling anything of quality. I mean, that's just
it's a good way of putting it. Yes.
I mean, that's what it is. Right. And for me, I think that there's a clear cut thing that's going to divide this team that I know we're going to dive into for this matchup. And it's not what a lot of people think. I think a lot of people look at this and all right, well, Ohio State has an explosive offense and they have Jeremiah Smith, and how's Penn State going to stack up? Cause they only allow 174.6 passing yards per game. To me, this game comes down to who's going to control the line of scrimmage. Because against Nebraska, Ohio State got worked on the line of scrimmage. They did.
Yep.
Their leading rusher had 29 rushing yards. Behind him, Travion Henderson had 25. Right? In every major game that Ohio State has lost over the last couple seasons, like call it the Georgia playoff game, the Michigan games, you know, even the Notre Dame game.
Yeah, 2021.
Yep. Oregon this past season, even against Notre Dame, where they ended up winning that game, but it was closer than what a lot of people thought that it was going to be. Mm-hmm. The common denominator in all of those games is Ohio State was outrushed. Ohio State this season has shown the inability to generate a run game and put together methodical drives. It's been, you know, stall, 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 64-yard touchdown pass to Jeremiah Smith. Stall, right. Stall, or stall. 72-yard rushing touchdown by Travion Henderson. So,
or Emeka or Cardale Tate, right?
Right, right, right. So their ability to go on the road and control the line of scrimmage is going to be what wins or loses them this football game, in my opinion. Yeah, I really believe so. So that to me is going to be it. I mean, Ohio State needs to establish some sort of run game, and Penn State needs to find a way to stop the run. The reason why they went to overtime against USC is USC had 189 rushing yards that game. It's not because Miller Moss ripped them up for 400 passing yards. Right. So that's gonna be my takeaway from this big game. That's what I'm going to be watching for. What about you, Brian?
What's funny, the big plays part is interesting, but a little funny nugget. I was doing some research on the Ohio, you know, where Ohio State ranks in big plays, and they're tied for fourth in the country in plays of 50 yards or more. They are tied for fourth with, they've got eight. Well, only three teams ahead of them have played the same amount of games. They've only played seven games. That's Iowa State, who has eight, Navy, who's second with nine, and then Boise State, who's first with 12. So, but then I said, you know who's tied for second in most plays of 50 yards or more this season? I was shocked by this. It's Miami of Ohio. Miami, Ohio. I was shocked by that. But anyway, back to this matchup. Trevor, I'm so torn on this matchup because part of me is like, don't get caught up in the Buckeyes against Nebraska too much, Brian. Don't do it, because that was that classic look-ahead game for a team that is prone to having these kind of look-ahead games. And I think back to multiple times over the years where they would play, like, remember in 2022, they played Maryland right before Michigan, and they ended up winning 43-30, but it was a really close competitive game, and they kept it kind of close for a while, and it was a bit of a dogfight. And I think back to, you know, some years where they've had those type of performances, Trev, where it's like you're playing this team. Maryland was another one back in 2018, if you remember, where the running back Maryland had, what was his name? Anthony McFarland, just looked it up. Anthony McFarland just went off on Ohio State, and Ohio State won 52-51. It happened to be right before their game against Michigan. You're going to be prone, and it was a big game against Michigan, because remember the time everyone's like, Michigan should be in the playoff, and they're such a different team since they lost to Notre Dame and all the other nonsense, right? And they just have had those overlooked games. This is not new for Ohio State and a lot of teams in college football. I mean, Notre Dame's been prone to that. So part of me is like, don't get caught up in that Nebraska game. And then you get to the Oregon game, and as you pointed out, they went on the road against top five team and lost by a point. You know, like there's some chinks in the armor in this game. So when I look at this, and then, but the other thing too is, you talk about trends. I mean, this is a game, Ohio State's won seven straight of these games and 11 of the last 12. You know, so when you go back to when Brian Kelly arrived at Notre Dame, Penn State and Ohio State have played every season since then, every season. And Penn State's 12 and, or Ohio State's 12-2. And they lost by 3 points in Happy Valley, and they lost by 6 points in Columbus back in 2011, in a year where Luke Fickell was the head coach. That's the first win they had. James Franklin's got one win over Ohio State. And that's where I struggle. But it's going to be in Happy Valley, and it's a road game. I get all that. So was the game that they played there 2 years ago that Ohio State won 44-31. So was the game they played in 2020 that Ohio State won 38-25. So was the game in 2018 where Ohio State won by a point. Yes, Penn State beat him in 2016, but in 2014, Ohio State beat him there by a touchdown. So the Buckeyes know how to win there. You know, that's the thing, is they know how to win there. So this comes down to, is Penn State's defense good enough to keep Ohio State in check? And you look at the numbers for Penn State, and on paper, you'd think their pass defense has got a shot to be impactful in this game. You mentioned, Trevor, they're holding opponents 176 yards per game, 174.6 yards per game. Which is one of the top best in the country. If you look at their yards per attempt, they're allowing opponents to go for 100 or 5.7 yards per attempt, which ties with Notre Dame for sixth, right? When you're tied with Notre Dame for anything in the pass game, it's a pretty good number, right? When you look at their quarterback or their passer rating, their 109 is where they are. And, you know, that's tied for 14th, or is 14th in the country at this point in time. Completion percentage, Penn State, again, they're in a good place there. Let me pull this up. They're 32nd, 57.2. So there's some good things you look at statistically, but then I look, Trevor, and I'm like, who have they played? Okay, they held Kent State to 2 of 13 for 18 yards. right? They held West Virginia 161. They're not very good throwing the football. They shut down Illinois' pass game. All right, who hasn't? They shut down UCLA's pass game. All right, who hasn't? USC was a good performance, and then Wisconsin. So, like, the last 2 weeks have been better. But I'm like, who has tested them in the pass game? Who has really had that group that could say, okay, they've really tested them the way that Ohio State's going to test them in the passing game? That concerns me. And then I start thinking about, but okay, that's true, but Penn State's got a pretty good pass rushing team this year, right? They get after the quarterback a little bit. And that's where I start to, again, go back and say, okay, you know, can they stop Abdul Carter from getting off? Can they stop Danny Dennis Sutton? So I keep going back and forth, Trevor, because there's aspects of this matchup that I like Ohio State and aspects of this matchup that I like Penn State. But at the end of the day, here's what it comes down to for me. I'm higher on Drew Aller than a lot of other people are. I have been. And he continues to win games, and people continue to dismiss him, and they pick apart this part of his game, and they pick apart that part of his game. And he's just kind of like how Bo Nix was, right? Everybody hated on Bo Nix, and they'd ignore. Drew Aller's completing over 70% of his passes. He's averaging 10 yards attempt. He's got a quarterback rating of 174.6. He's got 12 touchdowns and 4 picks. 3 of those came in one game where he led a brilliant comeback in the last game, and people act like he sucks. I mean, he's 14 of 18 for 148 yards and a touchdown against Wisconsin before he came out. But he's not a guy that you look at and he just doesn't – you watch him and he just doesn't have that flair that a lot of other top quarterbacks have. His numbers are good. You're like, but shouldn't a guy that has those kind of numbers be part of an offense that's more dynamic than what Penn State is? Because if you look at Penn State and you look at their statistics and you say, well, you know, this is offense that, I mean, they're pretty dangerous, no, right? Like, they're averaging, 33.3 points per game? It's not bad. You know, offensively, they average 463 yards per game, 7.1 yards per play. That's pretty good. But when you look at it, like, the numbers in yards don't match the points. Because they're averaging only 33.3 per game, and 56 of that came in one game, Trevor, against one of the worst teams in college football in Kent State. In their other 6 games this season, it's 6, right? 3, 4, 5. Yes, it's 6 games because they're 7-0. They've only averaged 20 point. No, that's not right. No, hold on a second. So they've scored 233 points. Let's take away 56, divide that by 6. They're averaging 29.5 points per game. They have only gone over 30 points once in the last 4 games. And my question is going to be, none of those teams that they've played have a better defense than Ohio State. Penn State's defense could play great, hold Ohio State to 17 points, but is their offense good enough to win? It's a lot like the Notre Dame game last year. That's my concern about Penn State in this game. Can they do enough in the passing game to take advantage of a couple matchups opposite of Denzel Burke? They're not going to do to Denzel Burke what Oregon did because they don't have the speed. Denzel Burke's a good, really good corner. He's just not a burner. And they could go at him with Oregon, with Evan Stewart and some of the guys they have. Penn State doesn't have that kind of speed. So that's really where I look at this, Trevor, and I say, as much as I like aspects of Penn State from a matchup standpoint, especially in the trenches, I just don't know if Penn State has enough firepower on offense to score more than Ohio State. As much as I'd love to pick them, that's my concern. That's my concern.
Hey, CFB Nation listeners, it's Matt Leiner. I've got a podcast called Throwbacks with actor Jerry Farrar, where we'll be talking all things sports, but also so much more. From football locker rooms to Hollywood green rooms, we've got you covered. We're your weekly destination for the games you want to hear about and the stories you won't forget. So subscribe to Throwbacks wherever you download your podcast and follow us on all social media at Throwback Show.
I'm with you. You know, I'm back and forth. Like there's parts of me that feels like this could be that potential for the, you know, the old school Big Ten matchup where it's just, you know, it's grinded out who can control the line of scrimmage and who can run the football more effectively. It's weird. I mean, James Franklin has a horrible record against top 10 opponents, and home game or not, like, it's just, there are some teams that just will have your number, you know? And I think Ohio State is that team for Penn State. But I do think in comparison to recent years, like despite what Ohio State has picked up in the transfer portal, this is not as dominant of an Ohio State team as like what people might believe it to be. And I think the thing that I just always go back to is the line of scrimmage. Like the one biggest knock on Ryan Day is that his players and the games that he coaches in big games, he gets out physical, but they're always in it because they have dynamic playmakers. And so it's just, I think it's going to be another one of those tests is what wins, you know, the like brute physical force on the line of scrimmage or your talent at receiver. And in most games historically for Ohio State, the skill has not prevailed, didn't prevail over Michigan the last couple of years. It didn't prevail over Georgia in that playoff game. Didn't prevail over Oregon that one year. It's just, I'm so back and forth because like, I also just don't know if Penn State has the firepower to beat Ohio State. If you fast forward to Saturday at 5 PM and you're like, hey, Penn State won, I'd be like, I could see as to why, if you told me why. And, but also if you told me that Ohio State won, I'd be like, yeah. I mean, they're 12-2 against Penn State. So I don't know, man. I'm so back and forth and up in the air in this one.
So for me, it's going to come down to a couple things. They're going to have to pressure. They're going to have to dominate. Their defensive line is going to have to dominate this game. If they don't, Ohio State will score on them. Ohio State will score 30-plus points on them if they can't shut down the run and pressure Will Howard. If they put this game on Will Howard's shoulders, I feel good about their chances there in the pass game or in on defense to keep the points down. I do. After that, it's can the OC at Penn State design enough trickery type of plays to get the ball down the field? And can anybody outside of Tyler Warren at tight end step up in the pass game? That's going to be a big one. A guy that I'm keeping my eye on in this game, which is going to be very fascinating, is Julian Fleming, the Ohio State transfer. He has been kind of okay for them. I mean, Tyler Warren's been their dude. Harrison Wallace, Liam Clifford's been okay. Mario Evans has been their big play guy. You know, does Julian Fleming kind of have that? Somebody like in these games, a lot of times, Trevor, you'll see in these big moments, it's somebody that you don't expect to step up and be that guy. Like when you think of the 16 title game between Alabama and Clemson, it wasn't Mike Williams that made the big play to win it. It wasn't Deshaun Watson with his legs. It wasn't Deion Kane. It was Hunter Renfrow. You know what I mean? It's like when you think of the title game in 2017, I mean, Devontae Smith played very little, like had very little production for Alabama that year. I mean, he played, and he was part of their thing, but you know, Devontae Smith that year had 7 catches for 156 yards is all he had. Well, who had the game-winning touchdown in the championship game? Devontae Smith. How many catches did he have before that overtime play? 0. He hadn't caught a pass since November 18th against Mercer. But except, you know, it's got to be some complimentary player if you're going to win this game. And so somebody like that is going to have to step up for Penn State if they're going to win this game. At the end of the day, Trevor, the inability to score enough on offense, the fact that they're scoring like 28 against Wisconsin, whose defense is good but not great, the fact that they're scoring in the 20s against UCLA, they're at 21 against Illinois. They needed overtime to get to 33 against USC. I just don't think Penn State's offense is there yet. And that is why I don't think they have enough to win. And I'm not even going to get into their head coaches, James Franklin. I don't think we need to get there. I don't think we need to get there. So if they're going to win, it's because their OC is able to dial up some stuff to create some big plays in the run game and pass game. Somebody outside of Tyler Warren steps up as a pass catcher, and they dominate the trenches on defense. But here's the thing, Trey. I think they could actually dominate on defense and hold Ohio State 17 points and still lose, just like Notre Dame did last year. That's my concern for Penn State. I just don't know if they can score enough on this Ohio State defense.
I think the matchup of the day is going to be whatever wide receiver lines up across from Igbinosin. He's one of the most penalized cornerbacks in college football. And if I do have a big-bodied guy like Julian Fleming, I mean, you take out the whole, like, he transferred from Ohio State because he didn't get a shot there, and now he's at Penn State. You just take that out. You put a big-bodied guy on Igbinosin. He's going to – whatever receiver that it is, most likely is going to draw a penalty that game. And it could be at a very critical moment in the game. Who knows? So we'll see. I think that's going to be a huge matchup to watch along with the battle going down in the trenches.
So what's your prediction for this game, Trevor?
Gut. Okay. So gut feeling, I think Ohio State wins. I do. I just don't see Penn State. I don't think this is the year that they get that statement win as a program. And I know we're kind of talking about this as in, you know, Drew Aller is still going to play, but even if he does, he's not going to be 100% healthy, which is right. going to be a factor. And I just, Ohio State on offense has so much firepower, man. And I think it's going to be, despite what happens in the trenches, I have Ohio State winning, but I think it's going to be low scoring and I think it's going to be close. I see this being like a 21-17 type game, almost very similar to what the game looked like last week against Nebraska for Ohio State, but it'll be a lot better because it's against the third ranked team in the country, not 5-3 Nebraska. So I have Ohio State winning 21-17.
I think Penn State will be more competitive in this game than they were last year. Mm-hmm. The final score is 20-12, but it wasn't that close. They were never in that game. I have Ohio State winning 27-20. I think it'll be a somewhat competitive game, but I think it'll be one of those games where we're watching, okay, yeah, it's close, but I don't see this team winning. I don't see Penn State winning. That's how I think it'll play out. Is Penn State capable of beating Ohio State? Sure. Sure they are. I just don't think that they will. They've got to prove it to me. Again, 11 of their last 12, they've lost to Penn State. You know, you got to show me you can win this type of game. And so I'm going Ohio State 27, Penn State 20. I will say this, Trevor, this is the best chance Penn State has had in several years to beat Ohio State. When you look at this is the closest their rosters have been in a while, in my opinion. And it's going to require Drew Aller to have a big day. And it's going to then also require that their defensive line just eats Ohio State up. That's going to be the key. All right, Trev, so we're both picking the Buckeyes in that game. Let's get to game number two that we are going to talk about today. And that is going to be, let's go down here to this list, Texas A&M Texas A&M against South Carolina. 7:30 game on ABC. Number 10, Texas A&M against South Carolina. The Aggies are a 3-point favorite in this game, Trevor, and I am fascinated by this game, not because I think South Carolina is necessarily a great team, but we have seen South Carolina play well in these type of games, and they haven't been able to win them yet. They played LSU down to the wire on their home field, right? And it's Williams-Brice, correct? Isn't that where South Carolina plays, Williams-Brice Stadium? They played them well at home. Then they went to Bama and played Bama close, almost pulled off the upset there. Yeah, it's Williams-Brice Stadium. And so, they've had these kind of competitive games, but South Carolina just hasn't been able to break through yet with that type of big game win. Can Texas A&M be that game for Shane Beamer where he finally breaks free, finally breaks through? And I'll say this, A&M has not played on the road a whole lot this year. This is only going to be their third road game. They played at Florida way back in September. And then 2 weeks ago, they played at Mississippi State, and they didn't play well. Now, was that because they're just not mature enough yet as a team to go on the road and be locked in? Or is it they were overlooking a really bad Mississippi State team because LSU's coming to town the next week? That's going to be the answer. So I'm really interested in this game, Trevor. It's a big one for Texas A&M, very big one for Texas A&M, and it's a big one for Notre Dame too, because the more A&M wins, the better they look, the better that win over them looks. Let's talk about this game, Trevor. As I said, the Aggies are only a 3-point favorite, which I was surprised by, to be completely honest with you.
Yeah, I am too. South Carolina's played opponents close. I think they lost to LSU by 3. They lost to Alabama by 2.
Got smacked by Ole Miss.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they had a blowout win over Oklahoma, but Oklahoma's just not a good football team this year, man.
They also spanked Kentucky.
Yeah.
Kentucky's not Texas A&M.
So the thing that's going to be interesting for me to watch in this game, there's been a pattern of teams handling success after big wins this season, right? Notre Dame goes down to Kyle Field. The narrative is Notre Dame can't win these games. They can't win in the SEC. They win by 10. Next week, lose to Northern Illinois. Alabama, Georgia. Oh, man, Alabama has no shot. This is Kirby Smart. This is Carson Beck's year. What do? They jump out to a huge lead. Georgia makes a comeback. Alabama holds them off. Defining win for Kalen DeBoer. That following week, they go play Vanderbilt. They lose to Vanderbilt, right? Texas A&M, last week at home. Mike Elko's first year. The top 10 LSU's coming into town. You know, can they get over this hump? Can Brian Kelly get a win like this? Can Mike Elko in his first year get a win? And they do in resounding fashion. Now you travel to a scrappy team like South Carolina, and it's away. And it, I don't know if South Carolina has the horses to beat Texas A&M in this game, but just looking at trends, it's real interesting when you start seeing how teams have handled success. And it's not like it's, of course that coach could handle success. Like the two guys I couldn't, we're talking about Kalen DeBoer, who had so much success at Washington. And yeah, we're talking about Marcus Freeman, and obviously us as Notre Dame fans know his history, but he's also, I mean, he's 10-4 in top 25 games. You know, mind you, he also has a history of losing that type of game as well. But we're not talking about some bum coach, right? And again, Mike Elko, coach that people think highly of, as, oh, Mike Elko will get his team ready for this. You kidding? After what they did to LSU. So I think that's going to make it really interesting. I think that is a big factor in this game, is how the Texas A&M players can handle the success that they've had. They're riding, what, a 7-game win streak since losing to Notre Dame? So I think that's going to play a factor. They don't have a lot of experience playing on the road. Their quarterback issue is still interesting to me.
That's the big one for me right there. What do they do at quarterback?
Yep. So they have to find a way to push the ball down the field. They do. And I think that's going to be the key to success for Texas A&M on Saturday.
I think a couple things go into this game, Trevor. And I think of when I look at this matchup for Texas A&M, I say, you know, I think about who they should start at quarterback, and I'm kind of back and forth. And the reason I'm kind of back and forth is because this defense for South Carolina has been very susceptible to the throwing game. They are definitely vulnerable to teams that can throw the football effectively. And they're a very good rushing defense. They're only giving up 101.9 yards per game this season. Most yards they've allowed all season was 140 to Ole Miss, and they only went for 3.4 yards per carry. So their rush defense has been very good. Oklahoma went for 53 yards on 41 carries against this defense. And so, okay, so do you play Marcel Reed, and then now you're playing right into the strength of the South Carolina defense, or do you play Connor Wegman, whose throwing ability gives you a chance to maybe expose where they're a little bit vulnerable? However, one of the issues that Connor Wegman had last week, and I love it how 3 weeks ago everyone was like, oh, Connor Wegman's so great, and this is why if they played again now and they'd beat Notre Dame because how good Connor Wegman is. And the same people saying that like 2 weeks ago are now like, they got to bench him. And if they had Marcel Reed, they would have beat Notre Dame. It's like, come on, guys, pick a lane, okay? But the point is, the thing that has hurt Connor Wegman when he struggled is he pressure. You can get after him. This South Carolina pass rush is legit. It is really, really good. I was comparing their pressure numbers to Notre Dame's the other day, Trevor, as I was kind of doing some research on this game. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, you know what? Like, this is actually pretty cool. Like I've watched them play, and I'm like, man, this South Carolina defense is, you know, their pass rush is pretty good. And when I look at the Notre Dame defense, I'm like, hey, Notre Dame stacks up pretty well against them. From a pass rushing standpoint. So if you look at Pro Football Focus on the season, Notre Dame has 133 pressures on the season. That's the same number actually in the South Carolina, I think, is slightly above or maybe one below. Let me just pull this up real quick. I'm gonna give you the number specifically. So I'm looking at my end. They got one more than South Carolina. South Carolina has 59 total hits plus sacks in the quarterback. Notre Dame's at 55. That's pretty close. All right, Notre Dame. Oh, wait a second. They've only played 7 games. That's one fewer than Notre Dame. I mean, that's a legit pass rush, dude. That is a really legit pass rush.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at Kyle Kennard, and they've got the freshman who's a freak in Dylan Stewart. Their linebackers get after the quarterback. Like, this is a really disruptive front. So then you're like, okay, does that mean you want to put the mobile quarterback in there so you can escape that? But then he's not a great throw. It is a difficult decision about which quarterback matches up best against the South Carolina defense. And because if you go with Marcel Reed, you're going to have to try to run the football. This is one of the best rush defenses in college football right now, Trevor. So this is a tricky matchup for Texas A&M because football is so much about matchups, Trevor. You say, well, this team beat this team, and this is why the transitive property doesn't always work. Because what made you effective against that team is they're vulnerable to this, but then you go play this team, and they're not vulnerable to that. And so to me, I look at it, and I'm like, this is what makes this matchup really intriguing. But at the end of the day, here's why I'm picking A&M to win this game. I think A&M's offense is going to struggle. I think South Carolina's offense is going to struggle even more. Because when you talk about – hold on a second. They got one of the best pass rushes in college football statistically and on film. All right. They got one of the best rush defenses in college football. Why are they 4-3? Well, okay. They lost to three really good teams, LSU, Alabama, and Ole Miss. The two of them, you got them at home, and you couldn't win. One of them blew them out. So the schedule being tough has been part of it, but the other thing is that their offense is just not very good, if we're being honest. They looked a lot better against LSU than they are because LSU's defense is still not very good. But they're averaging 28.6 points per game. They're not very good at running the football, surprisingly, when you consider that they've got a pretty athletic quarterback, two really athletic quarterbacks. And a lot of their yards rushing is padded by a two-game stretch against LSU and Akron where they rushed for over 500 yards. In their other five games, they've only rushed for about 500 yards. So they ran in the two games against LSU and Akron, Trevor, they ran for 516 yards. And their other five, they've only got 1,126 yards on the season. That's what it comes down to. Their defense is going to play well, but can they score enough to win against this A&M defense? I don't think they can beat A&M because of that unless A&M has a letdown game. That's where I'm at. So that's kind of when I look at this game, it comes down to that. I just don't think South Carolina can do enough offensively to carry the day. So I'm picking A&M in a game in a low-scoring game.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. I don't think that South Carolina has the horses on offense to compete with Texas A&M's defense. I don't. I could also see this one being another low-scoring one. I mean, if we're doing score predictions, I have Texas A&M winning. I do. I have them winning in like a 24-13 football game. So I just, again, maybe they'll break the stigma of teams having trouble handling success, but this is a very disciplined Texas A&M football team under Mike Elko, and their defense is solid. So I think defense is what ultimately wins the day for Texas A&M. And I think they score points on offense. I think it's going to look sloppy at other times. I could definitely see them playing both quarterbacks on Saturday as well. I could see them going back and forth for whatever type of spark they think that they need. But yeah, 24-13.
Which would concern me.
Yep.
That would concern me because then you get into no continuity on offense. Mm-hmm. I'm going 24-16. That's where I'm going. And I think it's going to be a bit of an ugly game. I think it's going to be one of those ones where A&M has to kind of scrap and claw and hold on for dear life and pull it out at the end. That's how I think it's going to be. And I think sometimes games like that can be character building, right? And when you look at what A&M has coming up, you know, their schedule gets – they've got an FCS opponent coming up here after the bye, so they got a bye next week. That's the one good thing about their schedule is they do have a bye next week, so they can just focus just on this game. Then they have New Mexico – actually, they're not FCS, excuse me. They play like it, but they're not. Well, last year they were pretty good. They got New Mexico State at home, and then they're at Auburn before their big matchup against Texas. So – and you want to know how good of a football coach Jerry Kill is. New Mexico State won 10 games last year. This year they're 2-6, and they're not overly competitive without Jerry Kill. But they didn't get rid of him. He retired. And where did Jerry Kill go? Vanderbilt. What are they doing this year? Better than anybody expected. I can coach. I can flat out coach. All right. So that's kind of 24-16 is where I'm at, Trevor. Last two games, as far as like how they impact Notre Dame, obviously this game is big because if A&M runs, I mean, right now, if you're a Notre Dame fan, who should I root for? You should root for Texas A&M to win every single game they play the rest of the year, including the SEC title game. Because if Notre Dame has a 10-point road win over the SEC champs, that's going to boost their resume a bunch. Plus, it would mean they hand a second loss to Texas, possibly land a second loss to Georgia, which would mean Notre Dame now has head-to-head common opponents against Georgia and Texas. You talk about seeding. So, well, we beat them at their place by 10, and you guys lost to them, one of them at their place and the other one on neutral field. That would be big for Notre Dame. So this is a no-brainer. You want Texas A&M to win this game, keep winning, and win out. That's what's best for the Irish in this game and others. Penn State, Ohio State, I'm a little bit more torn on this one, Trevor, because I feel like if Ohio State – I kind of feel like for Notre Dame fans it's better that Penn State wins because it knocks Ohio State below Notre Dame. Whereas if Ohio State beats Penn State, Penn State's probably running the table. They're going to be 11-1, beat nobody, but the committee loves them. They've always loved them. And now you're sitting here with Notre Dame 11-1, Penn State 11-1. They've got the better loss, and I worry about where they are. So I feel like a Penn State victory knocks Ohio State below Notre Dame. Not that out of the playoff, but at least below Notre Dame in the rankings, because Ohio State could say, hey, we got two good losses, but you're like, but again, who did you beat? Nobody. And that's what's going to be big for them. So I'm going for Notre Dame rooting purposes, Penn State and A&M in these two games.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The waters get a little muddy, right? When you start talking about what does the committee do with the rankings if Ohio State beats Penn State? And for whatever reason, I don't know what it is. I don't for the life of me know what it is. And I don't know what argument there could be had for it, but the committee loves Penn State. And they have. I don't know why. I don't know what argument there is for it. But yeah, I'm with you. Rooting for Penn State and rooting for Texas A&M on Saturday from a Notre Dame perspective.
Yes.
Hey, College Football Nation listeners, it's Urban Meyer. Have you ever wanted to be in the huddle with two national champions? This is your chance. Join me, Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram and Rob Stone, every Wednesday as we take you inside the biggest moments in college football, as well as navigate the ever-changing landscape of the sport that you love. Let us guide you into the new age and have a lot of fun along the way. Watch Triple Option on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
So let's get to the next game. And this is another game that's a big national game, but also one that impacts Notre Dame. And that is the matchup, Trevor, between Louisville and Clemson. Also a 7:30 game. This will be on ESPN. Clemson is a 10-point favorite. 62.5 over-under. So they're expecting Clemson to win by 10 in a shootout. A very high-scoring game here between these two teams. This is Clemson's first chance to really beat a good team. This is big for Clemson. They need a game like this. If they end up not winning the ACC, they're going to need some impressive wins over teams like this. I think they play Pitt. They still have Pitt on the schedule. This is the stretch where Clemson kind of shows themselves to be a contender or a pretender. That's the stretch that Clemson's going into because they've got Louisville at home this week. They play at Virginia Tech the next week. They play at Pitt the next week. Then they play Citadel. And then a week after playing Citadel, they have South Carolina at home, who's been an almost giant slayer this season. You know what I mean? So this is when it begins. And so, Trevor, when I'm here, when I'm looking at this game, how good is Clemson really? We're going to start to find out this weekend. Not that Louisville's world beaters, but we're going to find out because this is still a good Clemson football. I mean, a good Louisville football team. And I know that people point to, they've lost three of their last five. Those losses were a 7-point loss to a one-loss top 10 Notre Dame team, a 7-point loss to an SMU team whose only loss was to an undefeated top 10 BYU team, and they lost to undefeated and fifth ranked by Miami, all touchdown losses. They were in every one of those games. The game they probably had the least chance to win was probably the Notre Dame game. And then the SMU game second, the game they had the best shot to win of those was the Miami game. So Clemson comes into this one having not really played anyone with a pulse since the opener against Georgia, a game they lost by 31. Louisville comes into this game very battle-tested. And in games like this in the past month, Trevor, the team that can't has come in battle-tested in a lot of these matchups has been the team that has carried the day in a lot of these matchups. So this is a big one. Louisville can kind of salvage their season with a win, a big win here. And Clemson needs to be able to start to prove themselves against somebody good, because I don't know that the committee is going to like Clemson as much as the pollsters do because of who they've beat so far.
You just don't know what type of team Clemson is right now. You just don't, right? It's hard for me to look at Clemson's schedule and be like, oh, I've seen some people say, oh, their offense has turned it on lately. It's like, against who? Wake Forest, I guess? Against Virginia, sure. They put up 29 on a Florida State team. They beat Stanford 40-14, a team that Notre Dame beat 49-7, right? And then you go and you look at Louisville. You have a Louisville team who has played and beat a good Georgia Tech team. They battled an SMU team. They battled a Notre Dame team. They had multiple opportunities.
Came back from 20 points down to beat a scrappy BC team.
Yeah.
On the road.
Were a defensive stop away from beating Miami. An undefeated, you know, people are talking about Miami like it's the second coming of 2019 LSU. But, I mean, they were a defensive stop away from beating the number six team in the country, right? So I go and I look at that and I compare it to Clemson. It's like, well, who's Clemson played? They've played a bunch of nobodies. And the one good opponent that they played, albeit that, like Georgia is better than any of the opponents that that Louisville has played, right? I'm not comparing those.
I'm not quite ready to say that, but at least the teams that Louisville's beat.
Sure.
I'm still not as high on Georgia as other people are. I don't know that they're a better team than Notre Dame or Miami, to be honest with you.
Agreed. I think it's more of a debate. Like
very debatable.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm not staking my claim that they are or that they aren't, but like but besides the point, Clemson has played one team of quality and they lost by 31. Yeah, it's like, so like, what's the art? Well, Kate Klubnik didn't have a good day. It's like, well, shocking that he didn't have a good day against the best team that they've played.
The only good team they've played all year, right?
It's like, but did you see what Cade Klubnik did to Wake Forest? It's like, yeah, I sure did. Like, Louisville's offense has a lot of firepower, a lot. And like, especially from a passing standpoint, I think people sleep on their running back room too. I really like Isaac Brown. That kid's explosive, man. Kid's explosive. And they haven't seen an offense like this from top to bottom since they played Georgia, and we all know what happened there. So, look, and no, I am not saying, for anybody that might be confused, I'm not saying that Louisville's about to beat Clemson 34-3, right? But this is going to be a much closer game than what people anticipate. A lot of people are extremely high on Clemson this year. For what reason, I don't know, outside of their name. But yeah, this is going to be a big prove-it game for both. Like, for Louisville, is it finally their opportunity to turn it around and stake their claim of, hey, we had a little bit of a slump against some really good teams. We just went into the 11th-ranked team in the country's place at nighttime and beat them. Now, and for Clemson, it's, are we finally going to stake our claim of, hey, we do belong up here. We do deserve a shot at the playoffs. We are a good quality team. So there's a lot at stake. I think the separator for me in the matchup is going to be, can Clemson's secondary keep, you know, Chris Bell and Ja'Cory Brooks at bay? And are they going to allow Tyler Shuck to kind of go crazy? So it's going to be interesting.
Here's a statistic for you, Trevor. I'm going to ask a little trivia question. In the CFB Nation show, Bill Troche always has his Troche trivia, right? And we've popped those up. I've had to do those a couple times when I filled in for him. Who of the six teams that Clemson has beat since their loss to, because they're 7-1, correct? Or 6-1, correct? This is their eighth game. In the six games since losing to Georgia, who of their opponents has the best scoring defense? They have played Appalachian State. They have played NC State. They have played, let me pull up their schedule. So they've played Appalachian State. They've played NC State. They've played Stanford. They've played Florida State. They've played Wake Forest. And they've played Virginia. Of those six teams, who has the highest ranked scoring defense on that schedule?
The highest ranked scoring defense? Like, you're talking like points allowed per game?
Yep, points per game.
I mean, if I'm thinking over the grand scheme of the Florida State, like,
yes, yes, you got it right.
Come
Florida
on.
State at 83rd is the best scoring defense they've played. The next best scoring defense they've played is Virginia at 88th. App State's at 125, NC State's at 110, Stanford's at 113, Florida State's at 83, Wake Forest is at 109, and Virginia's at 88. And they only scored 29 points against that Florida State team that ranks 83rd in scoring defense. So this is what I keep. This is what I'm saying. Look, I like this Clemson team. There's some I do, but they do not belong in the top 10 right now because they have played nobody. Look, those scoring defenses are terrible. You know, you look at okay, they're scoring 42 points a game. Well, they should score 32 points a game. You know what I mean? Like when you look at Notre Dame and you look at like Notre Dame's schedule, Trevor, I mean, Texas A&M ranks 19th in total in scoring defense. Northern Illinois ranks 15th. Louisville ranks 72nd. Louisville at 72, Navy at 69. Like almost everyone that Notre Dame plays, this Miami of Ohio is 28th in scoring defense this season. Notre Dame they have one common opponent against them. That's Stanford. So and then Georgia Tech is 55th. Everyone but Stanford on Notre Dame's schedule has a better scoring defense than the best scoring defense that Stanford played all year outside of Stanford. And then when you look at that common opponent, well, we'll have that conversation down the road. And the point of all saying all that is not that Clemson's going to get beat by Louisville. It's that this is their chance to prove something this season, because this is a quality Louisville team. And we talk a lot about this with Notre Dame. How do you fare against common opponents, right? So Clemson's going to have a chance to earn some good wins down the stretch. Virginia Tech on the road will be a good win. Pitt on the road will be a very good win. Beating Louisville will be a very good win. But with Louisville, what you're going to have is a common opponent against Notre Dame and Miami when it comes to, you know, how should they be ranked? How should Clemson be ranked? And if they can beat Louisville more convincingly than those other teams did, which the spread is 10 points, so it would be, that's why I found that spread fascinating. Because Louisville hasn't lost a game by 7 points all year. So what you're saying is Clemson is better than Notre Dame and Miami, is what you're saying with that spread. I mean, kind of what you're saying. I know it's for betting purposes and all that kind of stuff. So this is a chance for Clemson, who's also surprisingly giving up 23 points a game this year. That's the other part of this matchup, Trevor, is can their defense slow down the Louisville offense? And then the second part is, was the second half comeback against BC the spark that a struggling Louisville team needs to get back on track and pull off this upset? That's another part of this matchup, Trevor, that I find really intriguing.
It's going to be interesting to watch what like their feelings and energy are going into that football game. To your point, I mean, no matter who it is, when you have a 20-point comeback on a team, like that could be invigorating for a football team, man. I don't care who you're playing. So it's going to be interesting. I'm glad that you highlighted Clemson's like defensive stats for how many points that they allow, especially like with that schedule. And there's some people, oh well, it's padded by the 34-point game against Georgia. No, not necessarily. I mean, to an extent, sure. But I think it's somewhat
padded by second half points by teams they've blown out. Like Virginia getting 21 points in the fourth quarter. NC State scored a lot of points in the second half. But that's kind of indicative, too, of where's your depth on defense.
I was
when
just about to say
Notre Dame's given up a point here and there, but their second team makes a lot of stops. Continue.
I was just going to say, I think it's crazy that the fact that the best scoring defense that they've played is ranked 83rd.
Yeah. Yeah. No, best opponent that they've beat.
Oh, beat. Yeah.
Because Georgia's 13th. Of the six games they've won, the best opponent defense they have is that.
That's
nice. I think that's, yeah. So this is a show me game for Clemson in a lot of ways.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Trevor, it's pick 'em time. How do you see this game playing out?
How I see it playing out, I think it's going to be very close. And I do think that it's going to resemble a little bit of a shootout. I think this is a game where I could see Louisville leading at halftime. I could. I really could. So I'll say this. I have Louisville leading at halftime. 17-13. And then the second half, I think Clemson will just, they're at home. It's at night. A night game at Clemson is just always going to be a tougher environment to play in. I mean, the Louisville's hardest environment that they played in up to this point was Notre Dame Stadium. And they played Miami at home. So right. I think they also played, did they play SMU at home?
Yes.
So this will be the hardest environment that they've played in all season. I think Clemson pulls away late. So I, 17-13 halftime. I have the final score being 34-27 Clemson.
Oh, we were close. I'm 34-24 Louisville. I mean, Clemson.
Look, I was about to say, okay.
Yeah, no, I would love it. I mean, obviously, if you're talking about what's best for Notre Dame, a Louisville win is huge for Notre Dame.
Oh,
huge.
Yeah.
Because it might be enough. It might be enough to vault Louisville back into the top 25. They got votes last week. And I'm curious how – and the committee's going to look at them and say, you got three losses to top 20 teams by a touchdown, and then you went on the road and beat a Clemson team that was ranked. You also have a really good road win over Boston College. So you have a really good home win over Georgia Tech. I think the committee would really like Louisville if they win this game. That'd be huge for Notre Dame. And then when you look at what Louisville has left, they play at Stanford. They get a bye, and then they play at Stanford. That's a win. They get Pitt at home, and then at Kentucky. It's not inconceivable to think of Louisville running the table and vaulting them into the top 20, which would be huge for Notre Dame's resume. So if you're talking about what are you rooting for as a Notre Dame fan, it's that. But as an analyst, I look at this game and I say, Louisville has literally never beaten Clemson, ever. Now, they didn't start playing until 2014. This is the first time they ever played. And that game was actually competitive. But Louisville has never beat them. And honestly, most of the games aren't competitive, especially the games at Clemson. Last time they played at Clemson, it was a 31-16 Clemson win. The previous game at Clemson was back in 2018, a game Clemson won 77-16. And then the previous game at Clemson was 42-36. And the only reason that was close is because Louisville had this quarterback by the name of, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, Trevor. He's a pretty decent college quarterback. His name's Lamar Jackson. This kid from Miami that played quarterback for Louisville back in 2016. I think he might have won the Heisman Trophy that year. He was a pretty decent quarterback, you know.
Rings a bell, but I'm pretty young.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, so that. Love it. So, I mean, that was the one time they played a competitive game at Clemson when Clemson was any, you know, since Clemson started their run in 2015. Yeah. So I got to see it. I got to see it. Is Louisville capable of beating Clemson? Yes. Louisville getting that win last week, I really want to see how this team comes out. What do they have to prove? This is a big, for all these guys that are wanting to get money and NFL, this is a show me game. This is a great show me opportunity. And it could be a huge game for Jeff Braum. But going on, you nailed it. Going on the road, and do I think Clemson's overrated based on who they've beaten so far? Yes. But you know what Clemson has done in all these games, Trevor, against these bad teams? They've dominated them.
Yeah.
I mean, they won by 46, 24, 26, 16, 35, and 17 in a game where their opponent scored 21 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So that's why I still have them winning. They should not be ranked in the top 10 where they are now. Games like this, games like beating Virginia Tech and Pitt, that's what then vaults them into this conversation of not only of being an ACC champion, but also because they are in control of their own destiny. If they went out, they're playing the ACC title game because their only loss so far is non-conference.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I look at it, Trev, and I say, I just – Louisville's got to prove it to me that they can beat Clemson on the road. And a lot of Clemson's big losses when they've been good – not when they've been bad, but when they've been good, most of their losses come on the road. I mean, last year against Florida State being the exception, and that was a very competitive game against a Florida State team that was much better than they were. Usually when they lose on the road. Usually. Not always. Usually.
Sure.
They did drop, I think, a one-point game to South Carolina a couple years ago. I mean, they've had a game here and there, but they don't lose very often at home. And Louisville's a team that has literally never beaten them. So until they can kind of show me that they can't win at home, or that they can even beat Clemson, much less beat Clemson on the road, then I got a tough time. Since 2018, Trevor, Clemson has not lost a game. Actually, going back to 2017, Clemson has only lost two games at home since 2017, because they dropped a late home game against Pitt that year in 2016. But since 2017, they've lost two home games. They lost by a point to a really good 9-win South Carolina team that Notre Dame played in the Gator Bowl. And then the next year, they lost by a touchdown in a game that they were very competitive in against a Florida State team that went 13-0. That's it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That's all they've done at home.
I was at the 2018 Clemson-Louisville game. I went.
Oh, my gosh. So, yeah.
It was the most – I mean, you want to talk about the most lopsided from like a skill standpoint, from a size standpoint. It was one of the craziest beatdowns I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was 77-7, I think.
77-16. Louisville, they scored a little bit late. Louisville scored some late points. You might have been out of there by then.
I think I was.
Yeah.
But yeah. Goodness gracious. Yeah.
So I'm going with Clemson 34-24. I do think they get to the spread. I think Louisville can play this tough, but they've got to start early. They won't be coming back from double digits at Clemson like they did against BC. Will not happen. They're going to have to jump out early and hope that they can hold Clemson off. That's going to be the key. And they need Ashton Gelat to get back to being what he was last year, to be honest with you. And his season so far has been a disappointment, but he started to look like his old self. I don't know if you saw this in the second half against the BC in BC. He went off.
Yeah, he turned it on.
See, sure. So can he carry that into this game or not? That's going to be a big. That's going to be a big question. So that's that game for Notre Dame fans. This is an easy one. You want Louisville to win this game. It not only knocks Clemson out of contention with Notre Dame being seeded higher than Notre Dame, it also boosts Notre Dame resume quite a bit, actually. Quite a bit. I don't know if there's anything this weekend that could boost Notre Dame's resume more than Louisville beating Clemson. I don't know if there's anything else. Last game that we're going to quickly preview, Trevor, is Pittsburgh at SMU. Number 18 Pitt at number 20 SMU. It's going to be on this is ridiculous. It's on the ACC network. It's not even on like ESPN. It's two ranked teams on the ACC network. Exactly. SMU is a 7.5-point favorite in this game. I was surprised by them being a 7.5-point favorite. I think part of it is that people are going to say, well, Pitt hasn't played anybody, but I think their beatdown of Syracuse last weekend was a very good win. They also have a road win over Cincinnati that they had to come back and win. They were down big in that game. They beat West Virginia at home. They have a road win over North Carolina. They have a close 2-point win over Cal, who's a quality football team. And then, of course, their beatdown over Syracuse. But I think people are going to kind of say, well, that was fluky. They had three pick sixes in the game. It was like a weird game. How good are they really? And SMU is playing really good football, really, since their BYU game. They're playing very good football. So, Trevor, let's talk about this game. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, very, very similar to actually what you had just brought up is the fact that Pitt, in my opinion, hasn't played anybody, and they haven't. I think the win last week against Syracuse was impressive, but I firmly believe that if they went and played that game again, Kyle McCord doesn't throw five interceptions with three pick sixes. I don't. And their other wins, like their most dominant wins, were over Youngstown State and Kent State. And Kent State's one of the worst teams in football. Outside of that, you had a 4-point win over West Virginia. You had a 1-point win over Cincinnati. You had a 2-point win over Cal. So to me, it's kind of that age-old question of talking through who's going to be the more battle-tested, right? And right now, that favors SMU. SMU lost a close game to a top 10 BYU. They beat a good Louisville team at Louisville by a touchdown. They dominated Florida State. They beat Stanford by 30 points on the road. However, the one kind of little wrinkle in here is the fact that they went to Duke and played a Duke team that, despite what their record says, And even though Duke is 6-2 overall, it was not an impressive win for SMU, in my opinion. You beat a Duke team on the road by 1 point. So I think there's a lot of question marks going into this game. I truly believe so. So, you have, on one hand, you have Pitt coming in over a very dominant win, coming off of a very dominant win over Syracuse. You have SMU coming off of a very not impressive win over a very underwhelming Duke team, despite what their record says. For Pitt, it's a lot of prove it to me stuff. It's a lot of let's see where you are. Because I do firmly believe that if you play Syracuse again, Kyle McCord doesn't throw 5 interceptions with 3 pick sixes. You know, so going to be interested to see what they do there. But I think SMU pulls away just because of their like experience. Like they're the more battle tested football team, because in the games outside of Syracuse where Pitt plays anybody with a pulse, it is like a 1 possession victory, and it's close. So going to be interesting to see how it plays out. What say you, Brian?
I'm very fascinated by it as well, Trevor. And there's a lot of these ACC teams, Trev, that we really just don't know how good they are. Pitt's one of them. You know, Pitt's one of those games where, I don't really know how good Pitt is. I'll give Pitt credit, though, because they have done what they needed to do. They were down big to Cincinnati on the road, came back and won. That's a decent Cincinnati team. It's not a great Cincinnati. It's a decent Cincinnati team. That's 5-3. You know, just lost to Colorado, beat Arizona State, beat UCF, beat Miami of Ohio, lost to Pitt by a point, lost to Texas Tech by 3 points, lost to Colorado on the road by 11. Right? Came back and beat them. Beat West Virginia at home by 4 points. West Virginia's average this year, 4-4. Coming off of a big win over Arizona. I shouldn't say big win as in like it's a huge win, but a much needed win on the road against Arizona, because they were 3-4 and going on the road. They lost back-to-back games by overranked teams by double digits. And so they needed that game. But, you know, Pitt beat them by 4. They beat Houston, who stinks. They beat Miami of Ohio, that's still Cincinnati. Pitt also beat Youngstown State, blew out Youngstown State, went on the road and beat North Carolina by 10. Beat Cal by 2. And as you said, the Syracuse game was fluky. I don't really know how that game would have gone. It just was a weird night. But you also look at the interesting aspect of it is both of these quarterbacks went into the week of not sure if they would play or not. Both have been cleared to play, so they're both going to play. But clearly the two starting quarterbacks are not 100%. And so that's kind of when I look at this matchup, Trevor, that's where I kind of find it to be fascinating. And the reason I really like SMU in this game, to be honest with you, is not just because it's home and Pitt's got to fly all the way to Houston or Dallas Fort Worth area to play this game, excuse me. But Pitt's defense to me is a little vulnerable this season. And, you know, in recent games they've played well, but they haven't played, played great against Syracuse, but Syracuse got behind early and they were able to kind of just pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. Kyle McCord's having a heck of a year, but he's not the kind of mobile quarterback that Kevin Jennings is for SMU, who I think could avoid some of that pressure. They can run a lot better than Syracuse. Syracuse can't run the football this season. SMU's a much better rushing team. They're averaging 201 yards per game. And Kevin Jennings is not even close to being their leading rusher. He's got 321 yards, 3 touchdowns. Rashard Smith is their leading rusher at 745 yards and 9 touchdowns. They also have LJ Johnson, who runs the ball pretty well for them. This is a team that's run for at least 179 yards in their last 5 games. And it's really their rushing attack has changed since they made the move to Jennings. That's been the big change. Because like the first 3 games, they only ran for 100 against Nevada in a close win. They only ran for 117 against BYU in that loss. And then they benched Preston Stone, played Kevin. They were playing both of them early, and they played Kevin Jennings. And since then, they've gone for 238, 204, 190, 179, and 211 on the ground. And the 211 on the ground against Duke, to me, was impressive. Because Duke's offense is really bad, but their defense is pretty scrappy. And they did a nice job of grinding out tough yards against Duke, as opposed to just ripping off of a bunch of big plays. But the consistency on the ground against a Pitt team that has had a good rush defense this season, statistically, if you look at it, I mean, they're holding teams to 93.9 yards per game on the ground defensively, but that's because they held Syracuse to 6, Cal, who doesn't run the ball well, to 63, Youngstown State to 71, Kent to 31. They gave up 188 to West Virginia, 151 to Cincinnati, 147 to North Carolina. The 147 against North Carolina is actually a pretty good number when you consider they have Amari and Hampton. So how good is Pitt's defense really against a mobile quarterback and a team that actually has some weapons in the perimeter? That's going to be the matchup to look for. And then the other thing, too, is one of the most overlooked aspects of SMU is that their defense is actually solid. They have a solid defense. They were much better last year because they were in the AAC. But even this year, Trevor, I mean, they're giving up 21.4 points per game. A lot of that was by TCU in a blowout where they scored a lot of points late because they scored 42 points. They give up 27 points to Duke this last weekend, which was, maybe a little concerning. You let Duke throw on you. That, you know, I'd say that's probably, if I was worried about anything, it would be that. You let Duke throw for 295 yards. And a week after, their quarterback threw for 70 against Florida State. You know what I mean? Like, it's not good. That's not good. The highest they'd given up all year before that was against Elon. So that's a little bit concerning. But I think their balance on offense is really the thing for me. Being at home and their balance on offense is the reason that I like SMU in this game. I do. I don't know that SMU winning is the best thing for Notre Dame, because I think Pitt's got losses left on their schedule. And I think SMU has a chance to have some, like, if SMU goes 11-1, makes it to the ACC title game, they're going to have a win over Pitt on their resume. They're going to have a win over Louisville, where I think they statistically were more convincing in their win than Notre Dame was. They're going to have a win over, you know, decent Boston. And then their loss is a 3-point loss to a really good BYU team. Maybe there's a chance that, you know what I mean? I don't know, that they could potentially be in some seating with Notre Dame. But when I look at Pitt, you know, if Pitt's able to pull off this win, they still got to play Clemson, at Louisville, and at Boston College. There's two more losses on Pitt's schedule, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, I just think SMU's the better team. I think they're the more balanced team on offense. I think that they have a defense that's good enough to keep to disrupt Eli Holstein, make enough plays, and then ultimately they're going to win this game. I think it's going to look a lot like the Louisville game, 34-27 type of game. Both offenses make some plays. It's about whose defense can make the most stops. And in this particular game, I'm going with SMU to do it. So I'm actually going 35-27 is my prediction, SMU winning this game. What say you, Trevor?
I have 31-24 SMU winning the game. You and I see it playing out very similar to what, you know, to what the outcome of that game is going to be. So I'm with you. I think SMU's ability to run the football is going to be kind of the game changer in this game. I do. So that's kind of my separating factor. But yeah, I have 31-24 SMU.
So Trevor, those are the four big games of the weekend, but I just want to kind of quickly go over some potential upset games, some teams that I have on potential upset alert. And I don't view upsets. Like I always laugh when like somebody, Pitt goes on the road and beats SMU. Oh, it's an upset. Well, kind of. I mean, Pitt's ranked higher. I know their betting line has them favored, but they're ranked higher. I don't know how much of an upset that would be. If Penn State beats Ohio State, Ohio State was favored. That's an upset. No, it was a 3.5-point game, and Penn State's higher, and it was at home. Upset to me is like, whoa, that team beat that team? Like Vandy beating Alabama. Man,
yeah.
That's kind of how I look at upset. So let's look at some potential shocker upset games this weekend, Trevor, and we're just going to kind of go – front, we'll do the same thing. We're going to go, or we'll just quickly talk about these. I'm going to tell you the game. You give me your thoughts on it. We're not making predictions. We're just kind of why we see this as a potential upset game, trap game, whatever you want it to be.
Yeah.
And we're going to focus on games that are intriguing or games that could potentially be, you know, impactful when you look at it from the college football playoff standpoint. And the first one for me, Trevor, is going to be at noon. It's a noon game. So while everybody's watching Penn State, Ohio State, there's going to be this game happening at 11 o'clock Central, 12 o'clock Eastern in Fayetteville, Arkansas, between number 19 Ole Miss and Arkansas. The last time Arkansas had a chance to upset a really good team, they failed. And they got beat by LSU 34-10. Before that, however, they beat Tennessee 19-14 and were very close to knocking off Texas A&M and Dallas. So the LSU game has been a little bit more of the anomaly in this. And Arkansas had a fourth quarter lead over Texas A&M in that win. So in their if you look at Arkansas this season, the three losses they've had, they had an 8-point loss to Oklahoma State in a game that was went to overtime. And it was a game that Arkansas had a fourth quarter, tied it twice in the fourth quarter. Never actually had a fourth quarter lead, but lost in overtime. They had a big lead early. It was 21-7 at halftime. Blew that game. They lost to Texas A&M 21-17 in the game. They had a fourth quarter lead in that game. Also had a halftime lead in that game. And then obviously Tennessee, the game that they won. So they bounced back from the LSU loss and blew out Mississippi State, Trev, in a game that Mississippi State tried to make it a little bit closer. It's like 41-10. They scored two touchdowns, make it 41-25. And then Arkansas said, okay, this is enough of this nonsense. And they blew them out 58-25. So really good win there. And then, of course, the LSU game is the one anomaly so far. LSU won that game 34-10. Convincing win for them against an opponent that had been competitive in past games. So, Trev, as you look at this one, Ole Miss comes in this game 6-2. They are still very much in contention for a college football playoff spot. I know that they're ranked lower in the polls, but I have a feeling that the playoff committee is going to rank Ole Miss a lot higher than the current rankings because they're going to look and say, okay, for whatever reason, the computers like Ole Miss. I don't see it, but the computers like Ole Miss. They have them as a top 10 team. But here's another reason why. Ole Miss has only trailed for like a few seconds the entire season because they led to Kentucky the entire game. And I'm actually going to look at this. When did Kentucky – hold on a second. Let me look at this one, Trevor. I loved how you rolled your eyes there because I feel the exact same way. I don't know why they feel that way. But let's see here. Kentucky led 10-7 at halftime. Ole Miss tied it. It was Ole Miss then led the entire fourth quarter until Kentucky took a lead. So they trailed for they trailed for 27 seconds of the first half because Kentucky went up with 27 seconds left in the first half. Then Ole Miss tied it 9:44. So they trailed for 5 minutes. And then Kentucky took a lead. 11 minutes, 13 minutes. They've trailed for 13 minutes this entire season. That's it. Because they never trailed LSU until overtime when LSU won the game. Right? So the computers, for whatever reason, love Ole Miss. So I have a feeling they're going to be ranked higher. I don't love Ole Miss, however. There's just something kind of missing with their offense this year. You've got this game at Arkansas. This is going to be – and here's the other thing, too. What do they have next week? Georgia. Do they overlook Arkansas with Georgia coming down? I don't know. And the final thing is the Arkansas players seem to love Sam Pittman. This is a potential job-saving win for Arkansas if they can pull off this upset. I really think it could be. So, Trevor, what do you think about me putting the Arkansas Razorbacks and Ole Miss game as a potential upset game this weekend, which would really shake up the college football playoff because Ole Miss is now out?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love it. This was going to be one of the games that I was going to mention as an upset for sure. So I'm glad that it's up there. Look, Ole Miss is, to me, they're doing what they've done every season. You know, they'll go and play Furman and beat them. You know, they put up a 70 burger, right? They beat Middle Tennessee State 52-3. They beat Wake Forest 40-6. Georgia Southern 52-13. So what Ole Miss does every single year, what it feels like, is they play four teams that hardly have a pulse. And then the second they get into conference play, where they're playing competent football teams, it's kind of when that comes into play, right? Like you start to see, it's interesting that they go from averaging, 50 points a game, 60 points a game, to they get into conference play and they can't score into the 30s, right? So, yeah, I mean, you go and look at the Kentucky game, they scored 17 points. Against South Carolina, they scored 27. Against LSU, they scored 26. Against Oklahoma, they scored 26. And if you were watching that football game, that was not a good-looking football game at all. Arkansas, on the other hand, they're just one of those teams that you can't count out because they do play teams close, right? Like Texas A&M. Yeah, they absolutely battle. I mean, outside of what LSU did to them on the 19th, right? But for the most part, for the opponents that they've played that they should have beaten, they've beaten, right? Excuse me, they should have worked Mississippi State, and they did. They beat them 58-25. You know, they should have beaten Auburn, and they won by 10. You know, the one game that I can see kind of drawing comparisons to is they lost to Oklahoma State earlier in the year, 39-31 in overtime. But I just with this,
but they had a big lead in that game, though. I mean, you know what I mean? Like that was a game where they looked like they were going to win that game convincingly, and Oklahoma State was pulling out like trick plays to get back in. Yeah. I mean, it was a wild game.
Oh, it was. And Ole Miss to me is that team that when they play a bad school, that's when, you know, who's stopping Jackson Dart? Who's stopping this Lane Kiffin offense? Anybody in the SEC? They start SEC play and they can't score over 30 points a game, but you play poor competition on the outside, they're hanging 60. And that's just kind of what Ole Miss has been.
Is the most they've scored in offense. And they're averaging 39.5 points per game, to your point, Trevor. They have yet to score more than 26 points in or 27 points in a conference game so far this season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be tale of this game. It really is. So Arkansas, Ole Miss, definitely have Ole Miss on upset alert. It's going to be very, very interesting game. Here's another one that we have on upset alert. And it's unlikely, but it's just one of those weird things that can happen. And I want to get your thoughts on this, Trevor. Number one, Oregon, going on the road against Michigan. Everything about this game says that Oregon should absolutely blow Michigan out. Everything about this game says this should be a Michigan blowout, an Oregon blowout. But here's the deal. Michigan has been a much better team at home this season than they have been on the road. They're coming off a very emotional win over Michigan State. You look at Oregon and what they've kind of got on their schedule. They are playing very good football. They should cruise the rest of the way. Everything about this game says that this should be a blowout. Shouldn't be close. But I just feel like every year there's just games like this in every league where you're like, how did that team lose to that team? And that is one of these games. So I'm not predicting Oregon to lose, but this game is one that I'm going to be doing a little bit of scoreboard watching when this game is being played, Trevor. It's being played at 3:30 on CBS. Oregon's a 14.5 point favorite. So the whole country is going to be watching Florida and Georgia, and then two other games that you and I are going to talk about here. I don't know that a lot of people are going to be tuning into Oregon and Michigan, but I'm going to probably have that on maybe my iPad off to the side just to see how it goes. I don't think Michigan has enough firepower to win this game, but weird things like this tend to happen. And so I will, you know, a couple days after Halloween, it's going to be interesting, Trevor. It's unlikely. It's the least likely of all our upset picks, but I felt it was at least worth mentioning Oregon going across country to play this game. And when you look at the Oregon schedule so far, Trevor, they've only had one cross-country trip so far. That was at Purdue. They did not play very well in that game. They won 35-0. If you watched that game, I watched that game. It was the night before Notre Dame played Georgia Tech. I was not blown away with how Oregon played in that game. So we've seen this a lot. These teams go cross country. Penn State goes cross country, play USC, doesn't play very well. You see USC at home takes Penn State down to the wire, but then they go on the road and get beat by Minnesota. You know, go on the road and get beat. Who was the other team that beat USC? They've had two losses on the road, correct? Oh, Michigan, right? Lost to Michigan. It's going to be a very interesting game, Trevor. Very interesting game.
I think the one thing that's interesting about this is like there's no argument that I could make for Michigan that's like on paper. But like the thing that's been like working for them is just this, it's us against the world mentality. Nobody believes in us. And like that, there is no stat that you can track. I mean, I can pull up a stat to show why people don't believe in you, but I can't.
I got some those film things, I can show you that shows why people don't believe in you.
I was about to say, right? But I don't have like a stat that says, but actually, no, like there is no but actually. With them, but it's going to be by far the hardest place that Oregon has to play at in the entirety of the season. Yes, they played Ohio State. That was at home. Yes, And I'm going to be interested to see how they handle it, because this is a season saving game for Michigan. Not season saving as in if they win, they might be in the playoff hunt. But, you know, the best opponent that they have played up to this point is Texas at home. Mm-hmm. And Texas blew the doors off of them.
Yeah, it should have been way worse than 31-12. Way worse.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, outside of, you know, maybe upsetting Ohio State at the end of the year, this is it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is your opportunity to say, like, hey, I know we lost a little bit, but we're at home. This is our turf. Like, you're the number one team in the country. But, like, hey, we're a Big Ten blue blood. You're coming in here first year in the league. And I don't know. Like, I'm with you. It feels like it could just be, like, a game where you're rolling the highlight tape and it's, you know, Dylan Gabriel just doing stuff that he hasn't done all season, you know? Like, it's a weird, I don't know, man. I'm with you.
So I'm glad you said that, because I've always felt like Dylan Gabriel's due for like one of those games a year where he just kind of comes out and you're just like, what was that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what was he doing there? And he had a couple games like that last year. I didn't think he was very good last year against Kansas, for example. And he actually wasn't that great against his old school UCF last year in a game they barely won at Oklahoma. You know, he had a lot of games like that during his career where you'd just be like, you know, the Baylor loss in 2022 and he threw three picks. I remember that game. You know, there's just be games where you're just like, I don't know what this dude is doing. I don't know what's going on right here. The Louisville game, the year he got hurt, the pick he threw at the end of that game, it hits the linebacker right in the chest, and then Louisville takes it back a ways and they end up losing that game 42-35. He's kind of prone to a couple of these games a year. He hasn't had one yet, in my opinion, so far this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's the thing. There's nothing on paper. There's no matchup. There's no, you know, but if this, but if that, this is a game that Oregon should dominate. But I just, for whatever reason, I've just kind of had it in the back of my mind. Like, I'm just going to be paying attention to that one a little bit. I'm going to be paying attention to that one a little bit. And then at the end of the day, when Oregon wins by 30, we can then go back to relishing Michigan. But, you know what I mean, it's going to sound crazy, but Oregon winning this game would – or Michigan winning this game would be good for Notre Dame. I just – you know, I'm not predicting it. I would not predict it. I think Oregon wins convincingly, but I just am – I'm just going to have some side eye going on over here on my laptop on Saturday at 3:30.
Oh, yeah. We'll be checking it out.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Next game, Trevor, that we're going to be talking about is a potential upset alert. They're all at 3:30. Florida, Georgia. No, I'm just kidding. That's not a game that's on upset alert. I'm just joking. number 13, Indiana.
I was like, am I looking at the wrong notes? I was like, dude.
That's not on the list.
I was like, I'll hear you out, Michigan over Oregon. But I was like,
now we're getting crazy. Now you're talking about Florida being Georgia. All right, Brian, what have you been drinking today? What's in that mug? Number 13, Indiana at Michigan State. This is a very interesting game, Trevor, because Indiana is coming off. I mean, they're coming off multiple good wins. They're supposedly going to get their quarterback back this weekend, but I worry about him coming back too soon. I worry about the thumb. Michigan State is coming off of a devastating loss to Michigan in a game where I actually felt they outplayed Michigan for chunks of that game. They just couldn't put the ball in the end zone and had some very costly mistakes. But this has been a team that's been competitive in certain games. They've battled. Their pass defense is actually decent this season. And at times they've been pretty good at getting after the quarterback. On paper, this is not a game that should really favor Michigan State, but this is a scrappy Michigan State team, Trevor. And this is a Michigan State team with a really good football coach that has a young quarterback that's going to look really bad sometimes and really good at other times. And they're starting to run the ball a lot better. I predict Indiana to win this game, but I have this one as – especially with, and here's the other part of it, you know, we talk about teams looking ahead. You know, what has Indiana got next weekend? They got a game against Michigan coming up the next weekend. Are they, and then they got Ohio State after that. Are they looking past a 4-4 Michigan State team coming off of a bad loss to Michigan? I think they could be. This is one of those games that I have on my potential upset alert for this weekend, Trevor.
Yeah, it's also the biggest road test for IU. up to this point. I mean, yeah, sure, they played UCLA in the Rose Bowl. UCLA is not good. UCLA, they played on the road. They played Northwestern on the road. But outside of that, their hardest games, like most competitive games, have been like at home, right? You played Washington at home. You played Nebraska at home. You know, so I think this is going to be a true test. Now, I'm not saying that East Lansing is just this monumental place to play. But to your point, coming after a tough loss to Michigan, what better way to bounce back than upsetting one of the few remaining undefeated teams and a ranked opponent in IU in the Big Ten, right? So, yeah, I also have IU winning, especially if – what's their quarterback's name? Rourke?
Curtis Rourke, yeah.
Yeah, especially if Curtis Rourke plays. Now, it's going to be – we'll see what happens.
I worry about, though, Trevor. I really do. Even if he comes back and plays, I worry about that thumb. I really do.
Yeah.
Because you and I both played quarterback. It's hard to get that grip when something's wrong with your thumb. It really is. And to your point, Trevor, you talked about the Northwestern game. Let's not forget, Northwestern was leading that game going into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Indiana outscored them 17-7 in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Northwestern was up 20. I'm sorry. I said that. I thought they were up. It was 20. Indiana was up 24-17 going into the fourth quarter. It was only a touchdown game. Then Indiana kicked the field goal to make it 27-17. The Northwestern scored again to make it 27-24 before Indiana pulled away late. That was a competitive football game, and I would be more concerned about Michigan State than I would be Northwestern, personally. Oh, so to your point, that's their most recent road game. A lot of their action they've had has been at home. How are they going to play on the road? It's going to be very interesting. So, would you be willing to pick this one, Trevor, as an upset? Or you said you're still going with Indiana, right? Isn't that what you said?
I am, only because, like, look, Indiana has been such a weird topic for me all season long. Because, like, looking at the grand scheme of it, they have played nobody. Like, and that is an argument that yes, they've played Nebraska. Nebraska might end the year with 5 or 6 losses, guys. I mean, I hate to break it to you. And they played that game at home. Now, the one thing that is making me feel better about IU is they beat a scrappy Washington. I look at Washington and Michigan State in the Big Ten in the same light. Like, I look at them very similar. They're scrappy teams. They're, you know, teams that you have to look out for more than UCLA or more than Northwestern, right? So,
although Washington's been pretty bad on the road.
Yeah.
Like, they're 0-3 and big. They lost at Rutgers, got blown out at Iowa, and lost at Indiana.
Mm-hmm. No, so they've been
bad on the road.
They have. Now, the thing with IU that it's just so hard to go against is they just keep winning, right? Yeah. Like, they are completing the task that is in front of them, right? And that's all that you can do. IU can't control if how good their opponents are. You can control if you beat them, and they are. Now, I think this will be one of their tougher tests, but if you want to talk about their lack of strength of schedule, we're talking about a 4-4 Michigan State team being one of the tougher games. And yes, I know they play Ohio State in a couple weeks. They play, you know, but like that, this is what, week 9 for them? Like, their 9th game?
Yeah.
And we're talking about 4-4 Michigan State being a test. I think out of all of the upsets potential this weekend, I think this is the highest one. I will say that because all of the factors going into this. Curtis Rourke has an injured thumb. And for any Notre Dame fan that wants to say that's not a big deal, Blake Horvath is a dynamic athlete, and he was having trouble holding the football when he was trying to throw it and pitching it to his running back. Yes, there were factors that Notre Dame's defense is fast and sped up the process. It has nothing to do with gripping a football when you bring it back like this, and he just straight up dropped it. So it is a factor. It is. So I'm going to be interested to see, but I think out of all of the upset games this weekend, I think this one has the biggest potential to be one, but I do still have IU winning.
You know, you're always saying, oh, you took what I was going to say. You took what I was going to say. I do think this is the game that I think is the least likely to happen. I'm not picking any of these upsets. I'm just saying the one that's most likely to happen, most likely to happen, is this one. So we agree. The one that I think is second, the least likely, is Michigan beating Oregon, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The second least likely but I still think possible, is Texas Tech at Iowa State. Texas Tech is a very interesting team because Joey McGuire was doing a pretty good job of building their defense up, and they were scrappier on defense. This year, their defense is terrible. They're giving up 36 points a game, but they score a lot. They're back to kind of being Texas Tech. They're not a great team. They've got some bad losses. They lost at TCU by a point. They lost to Baylor at home. They lost to Washington State on the road. But they also have some good wins. They have a really good win over Arizona State, really good win over Cincinnati. They went on the road and beat Arizona. This is a scrappy Texas Tech team. And when I look at Iowa State, Trevor, I don't see an Iowa State team that's necessarily been overly impressive the last 2 weeks. You know, got a little bit lucky beating UCF. Did not look great beating West Virginia on the road, but that was a quality win. They are another team that I don't think has been super tested. And this is one of the better offenses they will have faced in a while. So this Iowa State defense is going to get tested in a way that it hasn't, in my opinion. So I want to see how they perform this weekend. I'm very curious to see how they perform. But I have Iowa State on upset alert against Texas Tech. This is my last of the potential upset game. I mean, there's others. Air Force could maybe shock Army. It's so unlikely in my opinion, but you never know. Maybe Kentucky pulls off a big upset at Tennessee. But as far as the games that I'm really looking for as potential upset games, this is the last of the ones. I think this is probably second least likely, but I will definitely be paying attention to this one as well, Trevor. And this would be a big shakeup game because the Big 12 would be in the margin of error for the Big 12 to get two teams in becomes very, very slim. Very slim from them getting two teams in. So this is a big one to watch. Very big one to watch.
Yeah, this could be a hot take, but Iowa State to me is a team that when they were ranked ahead of Notre Dame in the AP poll, that almost shocked me more than Clemson being ranked ahead of Notre Dame in the AP poll.
Yes.
For the reason solely of Iowa State is basically Clemson without the loss to Georgia.
Right.
With less impressive wins.
Yeah.
Like margin
your offense. Right.
Yeah.
Like 1 point win over Iowa. I mean, you could argue their second best win this year, the second best team they beat this year is North Dakota.
Yeah. And it was 21-3.
Right. They beat Iowa 20-19, beat Houston 20-0, West Virginia 28-16, UCF by 3. Yeah, they have not been a super impressive team.
No.
I still don't understand how anyone could have ever thought Iowa State should have been ranked ahead of BYU, who has two top 25 wins.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Like, Iowa State is not, in my opinion, Iowa State's not the 11th best team in the country right now. So I don't see Texas Tech doing it. They're a team that can put up a lot of points, but their defense is so bad. Man, I mean, week one, they had to go to overtime to beat Abilene Christian, you know. And now, mind you, week one was a ways away, a while ago. But they're just, I mean, it doesn't do a whole lot if your offense can put up 35 points a game if your defense allows 42. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of, those aren't the actual statistics, but just looking at their box scores, that's just what it looks like, right? I mean, you put up 44 points against Cincinnati and beat them, but they still scored 41. You put up 35 against Baylor. Baylor scored 59. You know, you put up 34 against TCU. They score 35, you know? So it's just the defense isn't great, and I think that's going to work out in Iowa State's favor. I don't see this being an upset either, but I also didn't see UCF playing Iowa State down to a 38-35 game either. So it will be one that I'm going to keep my eye out on. So, but I don't see this one being an upset either. But who knows? I mean, Notre Dame's last 5 weeks was crazy. So, I mean, everybody could get upset. Who knows at this point? So that's been the beauty and the fun of college football this year, man. But as far as that matchup goes, I think it is a team with a high powered offense going up an extremely overrated Iowa State team, but I still see Iowa State.
Agree. Somebody in the chat said Boise State's going down this weekend. They play tomorrow night against San Diego State. That would shock me. That would very much shock me.
Yeah.
Maybe Donnell Pumphrey, San Diego State, but San Diego State has been that team in a while. So that would surprise me. So that's it, Trevor, for this weekend, man. You and I will be back tomorrow, possibly tomorrow for the bye. You and I, or for the mailbag, you and I will chat about that here a little bit later. But safe travels this weekend, man, coming up here to your old stomping grounds. I'm looking forward to meeting with you, and grabbing some dinner and meeting your wife. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. So why don't you go ahead and take us out of here, man, and end the show for us.
Yeah, of course. I'm excited to see you this weekend, man. There's going to be a good slate of college football games.
I'm sorry.
Brian has something to say.
We have two super chats. I forgot to get to these two super chats. I'm sorry. The history expert. Just want to take this moment to say Thursday is the best day of Irish Breakdown. I love looking at Indy and the other big games of the week. I do too. Mm-hmm. I mean, to the point where, like, I got some ideas for things we may do in the future when we do more shows where we talk just college football as a whole. You know, potentially maybe ramping up CFB Nation. We'll see. We'll see how that goes. But just got to find the time for it. But yeah, that's I do. I love talking about being able to talk about Notre Dame and the other big game. So I appreciate that, history expert, and I appreciate the super chat. And then Michael S. with a super chat. Assuming Notre Dame has learned to live with success and runs the table, and South Carolina, USC runs the table, who is more motivated to win their game together? I still think it's Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
I mean, Notre Dame is looking to not only win a rivalry game, but they've got a championship that they're playing for. USC's playing for ruining Notre Dame's season. I don't know that that's enough of a motivator to – if because if USC runs the table, Notre Dame will not overlook USC at all.
No.
They'll be hot.
There's a chance they might be ranked.
Yeah, possibly, because they're another team the computers love. So I think Notre Dame will be more motivated, but I think the motivation is a lot closer than you might think for one team being 7-4 and the other team being 10-1. That's all I'm saying in that one. And another super chat from Michael S. Rewatched the Georgia Tech game and came away disappointed in the offense consistency and performance in the second half. Am I overly critical? If you're going to say second half as a whole, yes, that's overly critical. I think the third quarter performance from the offense is pretty good. But no, I mean, look, we talked about that earlier in the show, Trevor. The offense, that was not a four-quarter game. They didn't play well in the first quarter. They didn't play well in the fourth quarter. They were really good in between. To win a championship, you've got to play better in all four quarters. Games like that tend to happen to everybody. You know, that's just the reality of it. But no, I wanted to see that offense kind of put the final nail in the coffin of Georgia Tech, and they didn't. And so, no, I don't think you're being overly critical in saying that they weren't nearly as consistent they needed to be. And the overall offensive performance wasn't as good as it should have been. I think that's fair, Michael. I just would say I think the third quarter was pretty good. It was more the fourth quarters when things started to go south.
Yeah.
And I just think they kind of got the lead and just kind of sleptwalked a little bit through the rest of the game. It's how it looked to me.
Yeah.
It's how it looked to me. Yeah. So sorry about not getting those super chats earlier, everybody, but I do appreciate them very, very much. It interrupted what was a great outro by you, Trevor. So thank you all so much for being with us. For Trevor, I'm Brian. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Talk to you again on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.